Junior Power. This is Lynn McGregor.
And this is David Neely. And this next half hour of Senior Power will be filled with information and entertainment for
mature audiences only.
Medicare is so confusing. I didn't know where to get help, but I wouldn't call a plumber in Arizona to fix my pipes in Maine. So don't call some out-of-state 800 number to navigate Medicare plans when your help is right here at home. The Senior Planning Center represents all Medicare Health and Part D plans. They have trusted professional experts in every county. You should call them for your free Medicare review.
Call 223-6565 today. That's 223-6565.
Now we have on with us a gentleman by the name of Bill Hinderer, who is a Maine senior, a Vietnam vet, and a great storyteller. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I have to start out asking a little bit about the nature of your service, because obviously it had stimulated you to tell some stories around your Vietnam service. I thought maybe you could share some of that with the listening audience.
Okay, so I was a lieutenant infantry platoon leader in the 9th Division down in the Mekong Delta. I volunteered my senior year in college in the spring, about 2 months before I graduated, and 2 weeks after I graduated, I was at basic training. 5 months after I got married, my wife and I was sent to Vietnam.
And what year was this, roughly?
This was 1969.
Okay, and Japus, you got right into the heavy of it.
Yes, yes. This was, I was in about as much combat as you can see down in the Mekong Delta. At that time, we weren't in any major battle, big battles as Hal Moore writes about, but rather it was every day. Every day there were out on patrol. There'd be engaged with the Viet Cong, whether it was snipers or just small unit action, constant. And just so your listeners understand, one of the biggest things about being in the infantry is you're constantly tired right from the start.
You must have had to sleep with one eye open.
I always say you slept with one eye open and one ear open. And I tell people when you're out on patrol, there was no rest. And at night when you set up, you were lucky if you got 3 hours sleep. And sometimes you'd be on a 3 or 4 or 5 day patrol, so just constantly tired. And the other thing I try to tell people, is I'm a connoisseur of fear. I spent an entire year being scared out of my mind.
And that was because of the service, or while you were in the service?
That was when I was in Vietnam. Yes, you just always alert for something. At this point in my life, I get a charge out of people who go for mindfulness training. You can be no more mindful than be on an infantry patrol in a combat situation, where every moment of the time you're on patrol, all you can think about, all you're watching is your immediate surroundings.
So you referenced becoming one with the jungle,
yes.
And one thing I read about, and it must have got to the point where you speak about, you know, having to be alert and sort of on watch all the time. It must have been in part due to the real difficult nature of being in foreign area where they were more comfortable meandering throughout the jungle, perhaps, than our troops were.
The Vietnam War was a funny thing. I mean, there were three different enemies. There were the local Viet Cong. They were in their neighborhood. There were the what they called the hardcore Viet Cong, and they were just that was just a military unit that may or may not be in their home grounds. And then there was the North Vietnamese Army, who were from North Vietnam and who had traveled down the Ho Chi Minh Trail to get to where we were in the Delta. The hardcore Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese Army, they were soldiers. When you were involved with them, that was all-out war. The locals, that was a funny situation, because you might be on patrol and pass through a village. And in that village, suddenly there'd be nothing but old people and kids. So there'd be old people, just like I am now. The problem was we couldn't speak to them. We had nobody that spoke Vietnamese, and occasionally you'd run across somebody who could speak French. In my platoon, I had a fellow who spoke Quebecois, and the French that these older folks spoke was very similar to Quebecois. And at least he could say something like, "Is there anybody around with a rifle?" And they may or may not say yes or no. But it was you were in an area where you couldn't talk to anybody. The other thing that I tell people is how much you carried. And when you go out on for a 4 or 5 day patrol, besides your weapon and ammunition, you also had about a 75-pound pack. Believe me, when I returned, my legs were really strong.
Oh, I can imagine carrying around an extra, 75-pound pack, and then your weapon.
Yeah, and that was just all day long.
Oh, my gosh.
And of course, it was hot.
Yeah, we don't think about that, the heat here and being in the jungle. It must have been buggy and...
So where I was, it was flat. And for people in Maine, if you know anything about maps, I had 36 map sheets without one contour line on.
Because it was that flat.
It was that flat. And contour lines are generally was 10 meters, so that's 30 feet. And there was just nothing. The highest thing you'd see was a dike around the rice paddy.
You're listening to Senior Power.
With visibility, I mean, how did you hide? You were in the jungle?
Where I was, people think when they say the word jungle, they get this picture of what's called triple canopy jungle with the tall, tall trees. And we were in what they almost always scrub jungle, just thick and dense, like the densest second growth you find here in Maine. It was easy enough to hide, but to move through it quietly was the trick.
Oh, sure.
And just learning woodcraft. And by the way, just so your listeners know, we didn't have any GPS back in those days. You were constantly using a map and a compass. And that was the most important skill I, as a lieutenant, had.
Absolutely. I wish they taught more of that to kids these days. I have my dad's old compasses, because he was a Navy man, and then during World War II, and then called up again during the Korean War, but he stayed stateside for that. But that was one of their tools.
Yes, yeah, so one of the things, okay, so having been in Vietnam and being a storyteller, I tell stories about being a soldier in Vietnam, but I also told a little thing I can tell you is the Vietnam experience allowed me to have the most romantic 1 minute in my life. So everybody at our age group has seen the movie From Here to Eternity with the famous kiss on the beach.
Oh, yes.
Okay. I was reassigned to Hawaii from Vietnam, and my wife was flying out. Now, in those days, a midweek flight from San Francisco to Hawaii was a funny flight, because it'd have maybe three or four businessmen up in the cocktail section in first class, and at the very end, it'd have several surfer boys coming or maybe even some families that had gone to the mainland. And the rest was all young women. They were going to meet their husbands or boyfriends in Honolulu for R&R. So plane landed, and during the course of the flight, of course, all the young women are all excited and chattering. They're going to meet their husbands for a week. And they found out Anne, my wife, was going to get to stay for the next 6 months. And all of a sudden, she was out of the conversation. But when they got off, their guides were taking them to buses to go to the R&R center. And Anne broke out of the crowd because she saw me. We ran together and swung.
Oh, around and
round and round and round. And the kissing from here to eternity was actors, but this was real.
Oh. So, is that one of those stories you reminisce with her when you guys sit down for your hour and do storytelling?
Yeah, we talk about that.
I bet.
When we sit down and do storytelling, we do almost every day. First of all, it's practice for me.
Yes.
But sometimes I can tell her the stories, some of the Vietnam stories. She knows them all. And I have one about Valentine's Day and the card she had sent. Now, that particular story is about a 12-minute story, but at the very end, the card, you know, mail, we had the mail, and I was sitting down in the dirt with my back against the sandbag bunkers, and at our fire base, there was no colors. Everything was either dirt brown or army sandbag green, and the only sounds on this particular day were tanks moving around, the roar of diesel engines and the clank of tank treads, and there was some artillery firing.
Not a very romantic setting at all.
No, and the only smells were just dirt and cordite. That's the charge for artillery. So I was just about to open my letter, and one of the guys comes walking up, and he's waving a letter. He says, Lieutenant, my woman, she sent me a card. And he plunks down around the corner of the bunker, and then he says, hey, Lieutenant, we need some tunes, some music. You see, everybody at that point, you could get a little transistor radio at the PX really cheaply, and everybody had one.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you were inside the perimeter, everybody was playing them, no matter where you went. So he props the transistor up on top of the bunker and turns back to read his letter. And I was about to open my card on Armed Forces Radio. Was the only station you'd listen to.
Mm-hmm.
So, the Neil Diamond tune Sweet Caroline came on. So I popped open the card, and my wife wore Miss Dior perfume. She always puts some on my cards and letters. And when I popped it open, it just billowed out. And the card was just a pure white card with a big red heart. And in the story I say, and just for a moment, there was no sound of tanks or cannons firing, just Neil Diamond singing a sappy love song. And just for a moment, there was no stench of diesel exhaust or cordite, just the aroma of Miss Dior perfume. And just for a moment, there was no dirt brown or army green, just the bright red heart. And just for a moment, there was no war, just the words, I love you.
Well, interesting stuff, Bill. I appreciate you being on the program with us today.
Thank you.
This next guest has been an advocate for seniors for quite some time. In fact, back June of 2014, this next guest actually testified as a Medicare specialist on behalf of the Aroostook Agency on Aging in Presque Isle, Maine, and she testified to the United States Senate Aging Committee on issues advocating to keeping an office open, the Social Security office, for one-to-one, face-to-face, given that Aroostook County has 70,000 people, of which over 20% are 65 and over, and how important that was for Aroostook County. Her name is Tammy DeLong, and she runs the Presque Isle Office of the Senior Planning Center. Welcome, Tammy.
Thank you.
And can you speak to us a little bit about your vast experience in working with seniors?
I originally was hired when Medicare Part D started at the Aroostook Agency on Aging. So they originally hired me for a year, but the year turned to two and turned to more. And so consequently, I became like the face of Aroostook County for Medicare people. And therefore, I guess I became the... So I've been told I'm the guru of Aroostook County for something like that.
Well, you know, I was impressed by the fact that you'd volunteered and stepped up to the plate really to advocate so strongly. I don't think there are a lot of people that would be really comfortable taking the position you had. And, of course, I'm going way back to June of 2014 now, which again right. speaks to the fact that you have been working on behalf of seniors in Aroostook County for some time in a way that most people wouldn't. Concerned or nervous about delivering this kind of a message to the U.S. Senate on Aging?
That was a funny story, actually, because what had happened is Senator Collins' office was putting out feelers asking for people that knew anything about Medicare and the Social Security office and things like that in Aroostook County, and everybody kept pointing them to me. So consequently, they gave me a call, and originally I thought they were kidding. And so when we actually got down to it, we had to write and rewrite, and it was quite daunting. I was very nervous to be sitting there in that room with all those people and see how that kind of worked and how the, you know, law and things like that, or not law, but how that whole entire process worked.
Senator Collins has dominated that committee, but she had been chair of the committee. She's done a lot of work on behalf of seniors. But you brought up a very good point in regard to how important it is, and perhaps as much so in the county as anywhere in Maine, how important it is to have face-to-face services for folks up there. And obviously you still believe that today as you work at the Senior Planning Center in Presque Isle, helping out literally thousands of seniors. Do you want to speak to that?
Sure. Yeah, when they were thinking of closing that office, and the closest office, therefore, would have been in Bangor, and it's almost 2 hours from one end of the county to the other to get to that Social Security office anyway. And if you've got somebody in northern Aroostook County that is bilingual that needed to speak French and wanted to sit down with somebody, the closest office they could have gone to would have been Bangor, and they didn't have a French interpreter over there.
In many cases, you're reviewing the overall financial condition and potentially helping them with the Medicare savings program. Am I correct?
Yes, that's part of our whole, we usually do a whole person approach when they come in. We screen them for any state benefit they may be eligible for, any low-income subsidies. We help them, you know, maybe there's a med alternative they can talk to their doctor about. Maybe this plan's a little bit less expensive than this plan, or if you change pharmacies, you can save some money. It all pretty much winds up about the bottom line. How much can we save these people so they can get the care they need at the least amount of cost?
And it's so important that you had suggested that it's about the care they need at the least amount of
Correct.
Cost. So you do look at things like the meds they're on, the other issues regarding their personal health care. And then you have a variety of options for them because, of course, at the Senior Planning Center, they do represent all the major Medicare health plans. And you know from your work with the Area Agency on Aging, that X amount of the people, I don't even know what that number is, but do qualify for the Medicare Savings Program. In fact, some that may already be on Medicaid can have additional help, the combination of the Medicaid and Medicare package. In some cases, they may not be on the hook for much to any expense. Am I right?
Absolutely. So, a lot of those plans that work with the Medicare, the main care and things like that will give them a lot of the vision, dental, hearing, transportation issues that they, you know, some of the main care stuff doesn't cover all of that anymore, and they still need it as they age in, as well as most of those people do. So that's why those plans and a lot of the benefits that we can give them are so important. And a lot of people come in here and don't even realize they qualify, or they all have the misinterpretation that if they get on the Medicare Savings Program, the state's going to come take their house when they pass away. So there's a lot of misconceptions out there that people have. So it's nice to have some place to go where they can get those cleared up, and we can help them sign the paperwork and get all the benefits they need.
Yeah, and that is great, because you really speak to the slogan of the Senior Planning Center, help when it matters most. And I thank you so much for being on with us today, Tammy.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
So, David, if I want to listen to last week's episode, where do I go to do that?
All you have to do is go to seniorpower.me. That is seniorpower.me, short for Maine, seniorpower.me, and listen to your favorite episode of Senior Power. For final thoughts today, I reference a great From the Porch article from a Maine Seniors magazine several years ago, written by Hunter Howe. And it is just as appropriate today as it was when he wrote it. The name of it is Aged Graciousness. With so much turmoil in the world, many believe we're losing a basic principle of society, civility. Samuel Johnson wrote, "When once the forms of civility are violated, there remains little hope of return to kindness or decency." As a young boy, I traveled with my family to my grandparents' house in the coastal village of Jonesport. I viewed the people in the town through the lens of a vacationer, protected by age and excitement. Here, I experienced hard-working folks, friendly and engaging. And I heard those wonderful words over and over, "Yes, dear." I felt no stress back then, an advantage of youth. I'm sure, as we all do, that the Jonesporters had their troubles, that they surely engaged in grating discourses at times. Yet years later, one poignant memory remains unchanged, that I had experienced an overwhelming feeling that a strong sense of civility existed in that small village. I've also experienced the same feeling up in the county, particularly in the Fort Kent area. No doubt many readers could share similar feelings they've had in other areas of Maine. More important, I'd like to think that thousands of first-time vacationers return again, not just for the incomparable beauty of our state, not just for the lobsters, potatoes, blueberries, whoopie pies, and ploys, not just for the uncommon kindness, and I mean uncommon kindness found here, but for something much deeper, to wrap themselves around the badge of civility that many Mainers proudly wear. I've grown older. I can no longer lie in the hammock on my grandparents' side porch reading the Hardy Boys or watch my grandfather row his skiff to the shore after a long day of lobstering, or greet my grandmother, tired from packing sardines at the bustling factory that anchored that town. Now, after a life of ups and downs, I want less conflict in my life, and I wonder if other Maine seniors feel the same, especially if they've reached their late 60s and beyond. I guess it's a welcome natural evolution of age, a built-in defense mechanism of sorts. Conflict erodes my sense of well-being faster than it used to. I desire a less complicated life, but it's hard to do, surrounded by so many people on edge, their daily emotional life teetering on the brink of anger and frustration, ready to unleash a riptide of financial, health, social, and political worries. It's heavy, all that weight. Jeff Jacoby, a Boston Globe columnist in a piece titled, I Choose Not to Be Offended, and You Should Too, wrote that we are in a society that thrives on taking offense. Nowadays, seems it doesn't take much to set folks off. They offend easily. With too much inner rampage and frayed nerves, they snap, find fault, utter snide remarks, rant and rave, and demand an instant apology. The tendency to go right to the old jugular. Some disturbing, these verbal fistcuffs create a toxic environment, a cultural fender bender complete with burst of bellyaching blather resulting in bluster bedlam. It reminds me of a Western movie where two frazzled pistol-touting cowpokes charge way past any semblance of talking things out. They blow through the saloon swinging doors and face off on the dusty street. The stakes high. One lives, one dies. Hey, maybe we need to calm down. The old calm down decaf marches throughout our nation to stomp down all that gruesome growling. Over the last year, I've read many articles relating to this subject. I even considered that there's an Institute for Civility in Government. I smiled. Good luck with that. However, its homepage does say, civility is about more than just politeness. Although politeness is the first necessary step, it is about disagreeing without disrespect. Seeking common ground as a starting point for dialogue without differences, listening past one's preconceptions, and teaching others to do the same. Many of the articles I read discuss the action-reaction relationship in conflict situations, suggesting that we can control our actions to verbal aggressiveness. The overriding theme in all these articles was this. Is all this nastiness, this self-imposed conflict, worth it in the grand scheme of things? Is it worth it to get all bothered by so many little insignificant, bothersome details of everyday life? These pieces implore us to stay reasonable and take the long view that we need to stop and ask ourselves, will this problem matter a year from now or even tomorrow? Some will, but most will not. A wise woman once told me, know how to avoid someone getting your goat. Don't have a goat. You see, we have a choice on how we behave. Most of the time, the best course is just to let it go. The tea kettle blows steam. It's up to us to turn the burner to a controlled simmer. And as I said, this article, Aged Graciousness, was written many years ago for Maine Seniors Magazine, but it seems to be as appropriate today, going through the COVID and the political turmoil of our time, as it ever was when it was written. Aged Graciousness from Hunter Howe. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Senior Power.
My insurance kept going up and up and up and up.
I was getting a lot of mail about Medicare.
I could never have navigated through the loopholes.
Mainers across the state are finding help at Senior Planning Center, which represents all major Medicare health plans.
Senior Planning Center was a lifesaver.
Senior Planning Center did it all.
Gave me all my options and signed me up with what I needed within an hour.
Call 223-6565. 223-6565. Help when it matters most. SeniorPlanningCenter.com.